Welcome back to ContraCast. This is episode 20 for December 3, 2009. So 20 episodes.
Yay! Whoop, whoop.
That's a pretty good deal. I think I wrote a blog post about that about 2 weeks ago, and you know, that's pretty cool. I think there was about four times when we were recording all these that I thought we would just, you know, not make it any further. You know, we had 3 weeks off between like the 17th and 18th episode, and gosh, before that there were just a bunch of points. You know, when we made it to 10, I was like, holy cow, we made 10 episodes of the show, and we made another 10 more, so that's excellent news. And I guess due to the nature of our show, we won't really ever run out of things to talk about. I know John already wants this to be next week's episode because we're going to talk about something fun for him.
Well, if you think about it, 20 episodes is, it's a lot. I mean, we try to do this every week, and we don't succeed in doing it every week, but yet there's 52 weeks in a year, so
yeah.
We've been doing this for, like, almost, you know...
Well, we started... You know, the first show went
up online. Two-fifths of a year.
Yeah, we recorded the first show June 20, 2009. And so that's, you know, two-thirds of the way through the sixth month, and then we're now in the first week of the 12th month of the year, so...
Awesome.
Hey-o! All right. So let's get right to topic. As always, my name is Paul Kwiatkowski, and you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/ContraPaul. With me today are Michael Blowski and John Kwiatkowski. And how about we start off with you, Mike? Just give them your Twitter address.
You can reach me on Twitter at twitter.com/MikeBlowski.
John?
Yeah, you can reach me at twitter.com/J_Kwiatkowski.
Excellent. Now, before we go into our news segment in the beginning, I want to go ahead and mention that John and I are going to be starting another show as soon as Christmas break begins. So we'll probably have the first episode up sometime around, you know, the week before Christmas. And unless John thought of a name for today, did you manage that, John?
Working stuff all day.
It's right now it's untitled. It's going to be a show about design. And so, John, how about I let you explain what it is?
Okay, so we came with the idea because the major I'll be going into for college is industrial design, which is basically a blend of either furniture design, product design, and auto design. And unlike an architecture class, it's basically the class is as fun as you can get. And, you know, you get to build stuff for your projects. And I wanted to, you know, create a show where we can talk about all the different stuff that's going on, like new buildings that are going up, new cars that are coming out, new devices that are getting designed, ergonomics of them, and just basically how cool, you know, what cool stuff is coming out in the world that's not on, you know, like hardware-oriented or tech-oriented like we are in this show, but more of the aesthetics of it.
It should be a fun...
About it.
Yeah, it should be a fun blend of things you don't normally see in one show. You know, I can't think, I mean, you hear, you know, people will talk about the design of one thing or the design of another, but you don't have, you know, any one particular show that deals with all-encompassing things, cars and, you know, I mean, even furniture and stuff. You know, a trip through IKEA is a lot of fun if you have a designer's mind.
Oh, yeah. So much fun.
But as of now, the show is untitled. John should come up with a name, and we'll get a official little bumper out next week, I suppose. And we'll get the RSS feed up, and hopefully it'll be on iTunes in no time. So, without further ado, let's move into news. The first section of news, and I did not put a link because I'm stupid, is that the Large Hadron Collider is operating again.
Woohoo! I'm excited. I don't know who else is.
And on top of that, it actually set the world record thus far for colliding protons.
How's their record for that?
Oh, that was in the news a while ago, Paul. I don't remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, this is it's been about 2 weeks since we recorded last.
Yeah, true, true.
This was on, I guess, the websites earlier this week or late last week. The collider, I guess, smashed protons together. I don't remember the exact full number, but very fast, and in their ongoing quest to discover dark matter, we wish them luck. So that's a lot of fun. I remember last year it was like September that was supposed to get up and running for the first time, and then it was, you know, like a week, and then it was shut down for over a year.
Yeah, because it's so sensitive to every little thing. Like, a bird dropped a piece of bread on
part. Yeah, exactly. A bird dropped a bit of a baguette onto a piece, and it had to power down. But it's back up and running, and it's still running now. And in case you have not noticed, the world has not been destroyed just yet. So that's great.
But if you, all of Europe just kind of gets sucked into something, we'll know what happened.
The second article is... Brazil, and this is, 2 weeks ago that this happened. I feel out of the loop already. But Brazil just got the PS2.
Awesome.
Wow.
So...
This is the PS2. Oh, the PS2. Jeez. Okay.
It's the PS2, Mike, yes.
The PlayStation 2 that was released in fall of 2000 has now come to Brazil.
Can they stop making that already, though?
I guess not.
Maybe? I don't know.
It sells for It's priced at R799, which works out to around $461 for the system that you can buy for, you know, new. You can get a PS2 Slim, like, if you can find
it somewhere,
for about $100.
Wow. do they still make PS2 games?
Well, I guess so. I mean, I thought that they basically all trickled down now, because all the designers that are the developers that cranked out garbage games.
Yeah, but think about it. They don't need to make any more. You walk into any GameStop, they've got 10,000 PS2
John,
games.
Hey, John. They just launched the PS2 in Brazil. Do they have a GameStop with 12,000 used PS2
games that no one wants over here?
I guess they maybe have GameStops with used PS1.
Dude, markets in Brazil, just go to GameStop and buy all those $1 games and take them over there. Some 50.
He says there's no official PS3 presence, but they do sell older PS3 games for around $115.
Wow.
Now this is so weird to me because, you know, I listen to Extra Life Radio, and one of the three hosts, from Colombia, I mean, he just bought a PS3, but PS3s have been in Colombia, you know, for quite a while. It seems really weird to me because Brazil, I don't think of Brazil, despite the level in Call of Duty, I don't think of Brazil as like a third world country, you know. It just is weird to me that they would just have gotten the PS2 there. But, who knows? Maybe it's just a Sony thing. You know, maybe the Wii and the Xbox 360 have been there for a little while or something. Anyway, moving right along, the voice actor who played Soap in Call of Duty basically talks about a possible movie in Call of Duty. That's kind of fun.
Ooh.
And it would be like a Modern Warfare movie.
That would be awesome.
I think if they made it right, it'd be a lot of fun. You know, the plot in both games is really fun, and you know, I'd love to see it. there's that. What else do we have in news? Oh, and I just want to talk about this real quick. You know, all these ads have been all over the internet and in stores and everything for the PowerMat device charger. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's too expensive. It's a great idea. It's too expensive.
I think your power box does a better job than that would.
Well, the whole thing is that, you know, you just set your gadgets down on top of this, and they charge.
I mean, but for the convenience of plugging them in, it doesn't...
Exactly.
You know, the price difference just doesn't offset it enough to where you're just like, oh, you know, it'd be much... You know, cheaper.
Well, and it's not only that. There's several different things. For instance, they really tout several. They tout like I think a few Blackberries, the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and the Nintendo DS, and maybe a few other things. And to get it to work, you have to put it in this PowerMat charging case. And You know, you have
to set it up. Like plugging it in. You put the stupid power mat on.
Well, they expect you to have the case on it the whole time, but my problem is that, you know, these gadgets are designed to either have no case or a very thin case. And from what I can tell, this case is pretty bulky that you put on.
Yeah.
So, like, my iPod is a very thin device, but if I put this case on it, it would be, you know, BlackBerry size. So that's already one downside. And on top of that, you know, they tell you things like not ever plugging it in. Well, gadgets like the iPhone and the iPod Touch, you're hooking up your computer all the time anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because you're syncing music and contacts and everything else. So what's the point? You know, the Mike was talking about the price, though, and this costs about $100 for the actual charging mat. And as far as I can tell, it can only charge 3 gadgets. And it's
small enough, so you can only fit, like, 3 on there.
Exactly, but the actual cases are, like, $30 to $50.
And they're only for the iTouch and iPhone, and they're only for, like, a certain BlackBerry and,
So basically...
one other thing.
Exactly. So if you have, let's say you have the Nintendo DS, and you have an iPhone, and you want to charge them both on this, you're going to run about $200 to, you know... To charge your gadgets on this thing instead of charging them conventionally.
I really do not think it's worth it.
Neither do I.
See this becoming more practical in the future when companies who design their gadgets make it so that it's easier to charge by induction, you know, through the phone itself rather than having an attachment to it.
Well, put it this way. If the iPhone, and it's very plausible that they might do this for future ones, you know, if it shipped with a cord to be able to dock with the computer, but then its charging and stuff was done by just, like, you know, they give you a plug that brings it to, like, a docking mat kind of thing, and you set the phone down on the mat, that makes plausible sense because it would be built into the phone. To put a bulky case on the outside of it kind of defeats the purpose because... You know, anyone can figure out a way to charge it conductively if you got a case on the outside, but
mm-hmm.
anyway.
I think it's just, you know, I think a lot of people are going to buy it thinking, oh, I never got to plug it in, but then they're going to get it and think, oh, but I still do all the time, you know, and...
Yeah, exactly.
It's a waste.
Just not practical. We'll just call it not practical.
Yeah, yes. it seems like the price on, you know, early ebook readers, that sort of thing, it's not entirely in its prime yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move along to the link in the app of the week. The app of the week is a free game for right now called Project Phoenix, and it's a dual-stick shooter where you pilot a Doom buggy and then a tank, and you get to upgrade your vehicle with various guns and stuff, and it's lots and lots of fun. And my favorite thing, it's funny, but some apps do this and some don't, but none of the Zune apps... Like, the Zune apps don't have a problem with you playing music or a podcast or anything while you're playing the game, you know?
Yeah.
Except for ones that aren't created by Microsoft. iPod and iPhone apps have, like, a problem where it's, like, half of them, you know, are perfectly fine at running music or podcasts during the app, and some of them can't, and so it's like... You know, I usually just mess around with the games when I'm trying to go to bed and listening to a podcast, so I end up not playing the ones just because I can't listen to the podcast while it's being played. So, anyway, Project Phoenix, I'll have a link to it from the show notes. The link of the week is really fun, and I found it right after the last show, and it's called Zombie Outbreak Simulator Class 3. And, holy cow, it's fun. It reminds me of Sim Ant. I don't know if you guys remember that game, but it was like you know, it was a SimCity kind of successor, and you just add more ants or take away ants and make ants fight and gather resources and stuff, and you really didn't touch things much. But basically, you set your results, and so like you set the number of civilians, you set the number of civilians that are armed. The percentage, you set their accuracy, zombies, the direction they're going to enter from, and it's all done on a photograph of, or not just a photograph, but a, gosh, what's it called, not a satellite photograph, I guess a plane photograph.
Uh-huh.
Geographic imaging. But you just let things go. You set the number of police and the police accuracy and how fast it takes for killed civilians to turn into zombies and stuff. And you basically just get to watch as...
Basically, you watch how fast the world gets taken over.
You get to watch as zombies move their way into...
Well, the only problem I have with the game is the police accuracy goes up to 100%, which we know is not true.
Well, see, what I did with mine is I set the police max the first time, and then I set the police accuracy at 100% because I wanted to have those few survivors that were 100%, you know?
Uh-huh.
It seemed like the survivors could only shoot so well. Anyway. So that's that, and it's a lot of fun, and you should check it out.
Okay,
so let's move into topics. And the first topic that I want to talk about before the second topic, we're just going to talk about the Modern Warfare 2 campaign again. All three of us have beaten it now, so I think we'll just go down and look down the list of our favorite moments from the game and address some things from that. First, I want us to open up the ContraCast blog. I posted it somewhere. I posted it in Wave, and we had some trouble with Wave. I guess I should mention that real quick.
We all got Google Wave.
Yeah, I petitioned about 20 times on Twitter earlier this week and managed to get Google Wave. And so I did, and that was a lot of fun. And then about a day and a half later, I got invites, and so I was able to get John and Mike in on Wave. And we really have not used it all that much. it's hard and annoying.
It's kind of iffy. It
didn't want to work tonight for us, which is kind of weird. It seemed to be working fine for me, but they could not see the new Wave I'd created. The weird thing about it is that it's very strange after years of you have to type something and then hit enter or something, you know?
To type
something and you don't ever have to hit enter. It's there. They can already see what you typed. Because there's
you can part change of, that setting though.
Well, there's part of you that wants to have you want to hit something to show that you've completed it, you know. So mm-hmm. It feels weird that you guys can see that. Anyway, I just gave you guys the link. Let's go ahead and open up. Open up ContraCast, blog, and just scroll all the way down, and let's go to the first show, and let's start reviewing show topics, and what has changed, you know, what hasn't changed. If you look down the labels for the show, you'll find them. But anyway, you can see on June 21, 2009, we started recording June 20, we recorded, and then I uploaded on 21, ContraCast episode number 1. Which one?
I like the Twitter overload page of the picture.
Yeah, the fail one. We talked about Twitter and Facebook and condemned Facebook and lauded Twitter.
I remember us harping on that all the time.
I know. We were all sipping on Game Fuel. You just came out. We talked about Project Natal. And it was fun. It was 27 minutes. You know, I think we finished it up, and it reminded me of band practice because we were all just talking about how good we just were. I think we did that at every band practice we ever had back in high school. It was like, man, that was good. We're good, guys. We're good.
And it's all you ever did. You never actually practiced.
I remember we didn't have an official, like, Skype recorder yet. That was good.
That was the first one, yeah. John, that just reminded me of the smug alert.
Thanks.
All right. Show 2. Is there anything you guys wanted to say about topics from show 1?
Billy Mays here with another fantastic product.
So show 2 was the episode after that one, of course. And in between, Billy Mays died, and so did Michael Jackson and various other celebrities.
Everybody died.
We'd seen Transformers 2, and so we talked about what a hot mess that was. And Mike and I also talked about Windows 7, which we'd spent 1 month with and were pretty happy with. So,
well, now we got Windows 7 officially.
Indeed. Gosh, and Steven talked about The Hangover, which only... oh, that's right, John. We'll talk about that later. Steven talked about The Hangover, which he had seen, but none of us else had seen, and it was a lot of fun. And it was the first episode where we talked about the Zune HD, which will become a pretty much obsession for the next 2 months, 3 months.
We get it.
And then the last thing we did, which was kind of a, it was an attempt at something that we never ended up doing, and I'm glad we didn't, but you guys talked about Belews Creek.
Yeah.
And the thought was that we would maybe have a local section on the show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we haven't, because I have data, you know, I don't have a lot of concrete data on where my visitors are coming from, but I have a map on my blog, and I can see the monthly location of people that come to the site, and so I can assume that find it through there and find it through iTunes is anywhere. We get people from everywhere. And, yeah. You know, unless we're talking about something like in a city, you know, if we were a podcast dedicated to dining in Charlotte or something, that would be a different thing. But I'm glad we haven't focused on the local content, because that would be kind of a waste. ContraCast 3 comes along, and Mike and I talked about graphics in video games, and I think how I thought that they didn't matter anymore, or didn't matter so much.
More some augmented reality and Zune HD stuff.
Exactly. We talked about, I guess, the ethics of torrenting and some stuff about that, and the Pirate Bay still wasn't closed down then, and yeah. Mike and I reviewed The Conduit. God, that seems like a long time ago.
Oh, it does.
We reviewed The Conduit, which was a piece of garbage. And, yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm looking at these show notes now. I still, back at this point, I still wasn't putting in, like, actual links.
Oh, yeah.
I still didn't see the highlight. That's horrible. All right. Episode 4. John and I talked about Battlefield Heroes for the first time. We talked about...
We talked about cell phones.
Yeah, the Wii is a shooter platform, and then we talked about, I guess, some early things about the Motorola Shoals and whatnot. You know, if you're looking at the different trends and stuff here, we're still, I guess we're still finding our stride for this show. You know, we hadn't really found it yet, so we're just talking about random things.
I think we've been doing fine in the past couple episodes.
Oh, yeah, well, I think we talked about the last time, or maybe I was just talking to you, but the show has definitely found an identity now. And so that's why it feels weird to me to maybe think about adding other topics to the show when I could just start a new show, you know?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
Let's speed this up a bit. ContraCast Episode 5, we reviewed the new August Burns Red.
Talked about Chrome.
Chromos. Yeah, we talked about Chromos for the first time. Firefox, our browsers, the new Harry Potter, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good show. ContraCast Episode 6 was the first time we absolutely butchered Google Wave. I don't ever want to listen to that show again, because I know how none of us basically knew what it was. We tried to read what Google posted, but Google Wave is something you really have to use to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And we had no idea what we were talking about.
Yeah, I remember watching the whole keynote on it just to find out what Google Wave was. It made such a big deal about it.
Exactly. You corrected us by episode 7, in which we talked about Google Voice, which I'd gotten involved in, I think, and my new phone and a few other things like that.
Yep.
I say that I'm half asleep for a portion of the show, and I'm pretty sure I was.
I remember I kept on harping on that. I kept wanting a new phone because I had the Glide, exactly. Which I ended up selling, ironically.
I can't believe...
I thought I was going to smash it. I ended up selling it for $70.
I don't even understand that. I mean...
I took pictures of it. I told people it was the crappiest phone I've ever had and that it was horrible, and some guy bought it for $70.
That's fantastic.
That's crazy.
Of course, that reminds me of when I sold Spore online. I told them it was boring, and it was not at all what I liked, and still people bought it. They're like, they sent me that question. They're like, so wait, does it work on my computer? And I'm like, it will work on your computer just fine. And then they're like, all right, bid. All right, so the next show we had a little bit of fun. We talked about Legos.
Oh, yeah.
More talk about the Zune HD, and then we did talk about G.I. Joe. And John and I just had the pleasure, of seeing G.I. Joe.
Which was,
we'll talk about that after this.
We'll continue. History.
I think the Legos was a lot of fun, though. That reminds me of the kind of recurring things we've been doing, like talking about shooters and talking about graphics and stuff. What John's excited for next episode is we're going to talk about all of our history with racing games and basically go back through time and just kind of recount what we've played, what was good, what was bad, and what, you know, stuck with us. What do we have here? And Mike and I just saw Boondock Saints 2, so we'll do a doubleheader movie review section. I put a written review on my site for Boondock Saints. I have not yet put a G.I. Joe one, but...
it doesn't even need one.
No, it needs a review, because I need articles.
True.
So, in show number 9, we discussed things like the Apple tablet, the Zune HD, more GDGT.com, the N64, and District 9, which we all just saw again recently, and which is absolutely just as good.
Again, yes.
It also says we discussed the texting while driving issue.
Oh, that's now illegal, isn't it?
Exactly, and in case you haven't noticed, all the dumb looking signs are on campus.
Yeah, it's illegal now.
My dad sent me an email,
that's how I know.
The dumb thing to me, we talked about this in class, and I actually read the bill in class that outlaws this, and it bans receiving of digital media with a cellular device, and that is a problem to me, or accessing digital media and receiving and whatnot. The way it's worded, it makes it seem like you could get pulled over by if you've, you know, used your iPhone as a music player for your car and you've changed a song and the cop pulls you over because it's not an iPod, you could get a ticket for that. If you're using it as a GPS, that also is a problem because both of those you're receiving and using, accessing digital media. So the way it was worded, I was kind of disappointed. It didn't specifically just say...
I think it just serves the purpose of, you know, saying that it's... they just want to say that it's illegal, so people, you know, have the fear of not doing it, and then I don't think they're actually going to, like, you know, enforce it or catch you if they, like... I mean, they kind of have to see you basically with one thumb texting, you know?
We talked about that, too. What was annoying to me is that, again, like, it seems like an issue that is just going to be an after-the-fact additional charge. For instance, the law in North Carolina that you cannot talk on the phone in your vehicle if you're under the age of 18 and you're the driver. So that means 16 and 17, and I suppose 15-year-olds with a permit, cannot talk on their phones.
But I don't
know of anyone who has been pulled over for that, you know.
Yeah. I think it's just a law just to, you know, be there just to keep people, you know,
it certainly does
not distracted.
Anyway.
Yeah.
ContraCast episode 10. This one, Mike and I had just gotten to UNCC.
Glorious bastards.
Bastards. we talked about that, basically moving into college, and it was a lot of fun. So, what did we even talk about?
So we've only been here for 10 episodes.
Well, we put off a lot of time. See, we worked weekly, we knocked out episodes until the 10th. And then after that, we started to slow up and hit 2 week and 2.5 week and week and a half and 3 week, you know, gaps. Which I'm sorry about, everyone. It's just we can't guarantee our recording time, you know.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we talked about me being lazy, apparently, because there's only one tag, ContraCast, for show 11. Looks like we talked about free guide to Wi-Fi, employers using social networks to research their clients. 12, episode 12, we talk about the Zune HD, I guess, and various other things.
Dropping a status.
Lee Elmore dropped in late and dropped a status.
Oh, God.
So, these shows, I don't remember them very well. I guess it was because we just sat down and kind of knocked them out fast.
Mm-hmm.
ContraCast episode 13, we talk about the Zune HD, the Ninja Assassin trailer, Unicorn Kid, the movie Avatar and its first trailer, and various other things.
It's getting close to coming out now.
Yeah.
No. But we had, I guess, did we have Zune HD? Yeah, we had Zune HDs at this point.
Oh, we did?
Yeah. You can't tell because I didn't use a picture of the Zune. I used a picture of fish and chips. But,
because you were hungry.
They look good, too. So we talked about that, and, you know, we've talked about that issue so much, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Episode 14 is kind of funny because of how, you know, we're going to talk about Call of Duty more today, but that one is titled, Gaz Was Such a Good Guy. And as you all know, Gaz was basically Ghost in Call of Duty 4.
Uh-huh.
It's actually voiced by the same guy. And Gaz was a good guy. So we talked about my new iPod Touch, which I had by that time claimed, the new Base Hunter. And we talked about Accidental Fresh, which apparently is going quite well. We kind of got pointed to Accidental Fresh within, like, you know, 2 days of being created or something. And it's really taken off as one of these niche blogs online. Boondock Saints 2 was a topic in ContraCast episode 15. We talked about the Cleveland show and Verizon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, let's see. More cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Photo of our cat for episode 16. That's not just a random pick.
Zombieland, ZuneHD again, Fall TV.
Oh, yeah, Zombieland was a good movie.
Anyway, we've made it to 17. We might as well go ahead and skip to the end because that's where we are now. These are all recent. Anyway, we had a lot of fun with these shows, and so we have no intention of stopping now and keeping on going. I'll go ahead and throw in my please rate us on iTunes pitch right now. So we'd be more than happy to receive your ratings on iTunes, whether or not they're 5-star. It would be pleasant if they were 5-star, and a written review would be fantastic. We usually appear first when you type in ContraCast. You guys there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
Yeah, I'm here.
Weird. It just cut out the volume for one of you guys.
Oh, that was me. I had to mute it.
Oh, okay. There was option static. Anyway, so there's ContraCast. Let's go ahead and get into the movie reviews real quick before we get into Modern Warfare 2. John, you want to talk about G.I. Joe real quick?
Yeah, I'll do a quick, you know, 2-minute review in that. Overall, the plot was what you'd expect in, like, a 30-minute,
G.I. Joe cartoon.
Like a 30-minute Saturday morning kid show. Like, someone wants to destroy the world with some outlandish weapon, and his plot gets foiled by the good guys who somehow prevail, even though they're using bullets and not energy to shoot things. But... One thing that really stood out is, in one scene, someone's firing a gun, and the bullet flashes are very, very visibly just sprites. And that just killed anything of, you know, this thing has cool graphics, because why would they be using sprites, of all things?
Yeah, it was weird. Given its high-budget nature and its summer release, it had some bad graphics.
It hit up on a lot of the stuff.
Although... After watching it, despite some severe, not plot holes, but
massive
problems,
plot holes, you mean?
Not so much plot holes as ice falling through water. it was...
And, like, where did the people get the Hadouken guns anyway?
What?
Basically, these guns that shoot Hadoukens.
Oh, so energy weapons.
From, you know?
The Ryu guns? You don't know about Ryu guns? I have one right here.
They got
me.
No, see, they blew up ice and sunk it through water, which didn't make any sense. But other than that, you know, it was the kind of movie that if I had been 10 or 11 or 12 and saw this movie, I would have been blown away.
So much now.
And it's funny because if you think back to maybe 2002 and stuff, if this had come out, you know, at the same time as Spider-Man, it would probably have been a much bigger hit, you know, but we've seen a lot of this sort of thing by now, and so the concept of what it is not new at all anymore, and it just feels
And there was, I really hated the villain in it because it was so cheesy. I mean, it was unbelievably cheesy, you know, let me put the mask on and walk around while waiting side to side with my hands in front of me.
But it felt as campy as the cartoon did, you know?
Yeah.
But it felt like
a Saturday morning Power Rangers.
It was the kind of thing that if you can turn off your mind for about 2 hours and watch, you'll have some fun watching it. Now, Mike and I saw Boondock Saints 2.
Yes, inform me of that, please.
Yeah, I wrote a review on my blog about the movie, and after much thought, I'm not happy with it at all.
I can see why it got bad ratings or why it wasn't, you know, in theaters.
Yeah.
Because it was a sequel, but yet they tried to, like...
There was so much...
They didn't show original ideas. They just pulled ideas from the first movie and, you know, put them in. And some of the ideas were cool, and funny, but, you know, it just didn't seem original at all.
One of the things I read was referencing it to The Matrix Reloaded, which I still really enjoy. I think it's a lot of fun. But they said it's not a bad sequel, like... as in Matrix Reloaded, which dumped a lot of the things that made the first one better, but did several cool and new things. It was bad in that it tried to copy the first one absolutely.
Way too much.
And it had so many plot holes. I mean, the biggest and most glaring immediate one is the one that hits you in the beginning of the movie. And if you're like me, the movie starts off and I was lost for like 15 minutes because...
Oh yeah, so was on.
It didn't make any sense. They try to make you understand that in the previous movie, there were three cops that were always kind of bumbling around, and Daniel Defoe was one step ahead of.
Uh-huh.
But they weren't a huge part of the story. They were just in there. I mean, seeing them in this movie, you barely remember them from the first movie unless you've just recently seen it. And I had just recently seen it. But I didn't even remember them that well.
I saw it about 2 weeks ago. I watched it again. So.
I mean, I remember the cops, and I remember Greenlee mostly. But the thing is, the plot hole was that, who's the main character? Danny Defoe?
Yeah, Daniel Defoe.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he wasn't in there, but he was in on it with the Saints by the end of the first movie. Like, he was helping them out. But it didn't show that any of the other cops were helping him out.
Yeah, there was nothing at all in the first
movie. And they claimed that they were a part of it in the,
you don't even find out until about halfway through the first movie that those cops were on their side. And the movie treats it like you're supposed to know this. I mean, so...
Yeah.
That's a number one, like, horrible hit to critics. I mean, if you're going to go to this movie, it doesn't explain anything in the beginning, and these three cops are going nuts for what seemed like absolutely no reason. I mean, I thought, honestly, that they were just worried that the Boondock Saints were coming back, you know, and that they were going to have to start working hard again or something stupid like that, because I didn't understand it at all. There was just a lot of problems with the movie. I mean, I wrote in my review that the best parts were when it was totally overblown, like that that scene, Mike, with Clifton Collins, the Mexican. I don't remember what his name is in the movie.
Oh yeah,
that scene where he was imagining what was going to go down, and he told them how they were going to attack that warehouse or whatever.
Yeah,
and that crazy music was playing, and it felt like a 70s action movie.
Oh yeah, which was awesome.
He had that huge Magnum that he pulled out.
See, well, the thing is, like, it tried to, when, you know, in the first movie scene, when they go to kill all the guys, they're, like, in the rafters, and one of them brings a rope, and they're just arguing over the rope, and so they fight each other, and they end up falling down through the ceiling, the rope suspends them, and they shoot everybody, and it tends to work out, but the thing is, they tried to do that for the first shoot-'em-up scene of the movie, where they get in, like, a box, and they're supposed to pop out of the box and, like, shoot all these coke dealers. Well, the thing is, they end up fighting in the box, and everything goes crazy wrong, but it ends up being right in the end, because they end up killing everyone.
See, there's ways they could have saved that. They could have shown that scene as what happened when they crime scene investigated, you know? And they could have just shown that the crazy scene, I'm just going to call him Rocco 2, that Rocco 2 envisioned, because that was such a great scene. I mean, when I was playing that 70s type of music, and they just come in there, and they pop out of the box, and they shoot everyone with...
And he's got, like, a 44 Magnum.
He just, like, points it up in the air, and he's wearing sunglasses at night, and it was a great scene. But there was just so much in the movie that either didn't make sense or felt so unnecessary.
You couldn't tell. You couldn't tell some of it was like flashbacks or like the scene in the first one where, you know, Danny Defoe is like shooting his gun in the air when he's like saying there's a firefight, and it's like you can tell that like it puts him in the scene, but you can tell and know that he's not actually there. He's just remembering.
And that scene's such a classic for that. In this movie, they tried to
bring it back.
But the thing is, I don't even understand. I don't know whether or not the girl who is his protege or whatever was actually doing shooting at the scene when they did the crime, or... Anyway, the worst thing to me is the very end. And John, you know what I'm
going to... Go ahead and talk. I don't care if it's spoiled, so...
Okay, so at the very end of the movie, she is going to make an escape to an island or whatever, and Daniel Defoe shows up. He's actually in the movie. And this is the plot that got me at the very end of the movie. So, when you reach the end of the movie, what is inferred is that the Catholic Church, with its endless money and its, you know, all their funding and stuff, wants to, with the help of Daniel Defoe, who, in case you forgot, is a gay cop, Catholic Church, doesn't seem to work out already, they want to work with him to get the Boondocks, the brothers, the saints, out of prison, which they've just got in. Okay, so they want to get the saints, the Catholic Church wants to work with Daniel Defoe to get two foul-mouthed, drinking, shooting Irish brothers out of prison so that they continue doing God's work by killing Russian gangsters.
Okay.
Does that seem like something the Catholic Church would do?
No.
I mean, it seems
Catholic
like
Church is more into
like
children.
He read like the Da Vinci Code or something. He's like, man, you know what I should really do when I write this next movie? I should make the Catholic Church be crazy good in it or something like that. Because Troy Duffy, in case
well, the thing is, it sets it up for a sequel when the second sequel wasn't good at all. You know, like
no, it was horrible.
What's going to show about the third one? You know.
I mean, this movie, there were parts where I was tired of the movie going on, and I don't know. It was long, and it didn't have... The first movie was paced very well. It was paced in such a way that you enjoyed seeing each scene. You know, there's not a too long of a scene, there's not too short, and each scene comes at the right time. This movie took about, like, an hour to get started. I mean, they came over on this long trip across the boat, and I don't know.
Okay, I think we need to move on to...
It was bad. I gave it a 4 out of 10 because the gunfight scenes were kind of cool. But they were nothing new. They were just slow-motion gun scenes.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and do our last topic of the day, Modern Warfare 2, the campaign. So what we're going to do is... get a Skype message. All right. So what we're going to do is go ahead and grab... grab the Modern Warfare 2 chapter list.
Yep, bring that up.
Wikipedia. And zoom on down to where it's not. Here we go.
You got it, Paul?
Sorry. Kill some time, John. Kill some time.
Okay, so... Actually, the kill time set itself with...
Too late! What's that, John?
Kill scene on Modern Warfare 1 and how it transfers over to 2.
I wasted too much time talking about that last week. We're just going to go through the number 2 now. So I just got you the link. We're just going to go through... You scroll down to the campaign missions, and we're just gonna mess around with that.
Yep. Started off at the beginning.
He can catch up. So this game begins, and alright, good. We're just going to go through level. I just pasted a link in Skype, Mike.
Okay.
To what was high, what was low. We'll go through level to level each first, and we'll just discuss what was a lot of fun and what wasn't. So the first level was SSDD, the obligatory training mission in the game. And in case you've never played a first-person shooter of any nature, I cannot think of one that I played that did not have some sort of a training mission in the beginning. In Call of Duty 4, you were introduced as Soap. What kind of a name is Soap? McTavish. And then you run this obstacle course. In this one, you're in Afghanistan as an American soldier, and you're supposed to show the locals how to shoot your guns. And so you take down some targets, then go run the obstacle course. And I thought it was pretty effective as a training mission, though. I liked...
It was, because you got to think... I'll take over there for 1 second, but... The training missions I've played before in games are basically, okay, lay down here and see that target out there? Hit it.
Yeah.
Okay, now reload your weapon. Go toss a nade. This one's like you jump around the corner and it's like, okay, you've got, you know, a couple seconds to kill the terrorists and let the hostages live.
Yeah.
I'll be like 10 targets that pop up, 4 hostages, the rest are terrorists. You got to immediately know, you know, by the
time... You weren't just standing still, just calibrating your, you know, mouse settings or something like that, yeah. Like Halo did.
Yeah, I liked it because it showed you kind of the, you know, the just the day-to-day boring life or whatever of sitting around in Afghanistan for a little while when there were people playing basketball and just sitting against a car smoking or something.
Yeah.
I still think one of my favorite, intros in a game is the intro from Call of Duty 2, in which you're a Russian soldier and... your sergeant or whatever is telling you you're short on bullets and grenades and everything, but he has to show you how to shoot because the Germans are coming in, and so you have to use, like, you know, you don't have many shots at all. You have to take down a few targets, then you have to throw potatoes into a building where you wouldn't want grenades to be.
Yep.
And then, but the thing that makes it fun is that as soon as you do that, the Russians actually attack, or the Germans attack the town you're in, and so you have to run out right away and fight them. This one, you kind of, you know, it's slower. Humvees drive up to the end and introduce us to the next one, which is Team Player. And, was it Team Player, or...
I don't know the names of the missions. If you
remember them. Oh, no, I remember. See, SSDD, then we got in these Humvees, and we went to... we went to that Afghan town or whatever and basically defended that lakeside or whatever, the river, you know. But that was effective. It was, I kind of like the music that was there. That Hans Zimmer did the soundtrack, and it's very good. But that was an effective way to enter the game. And then the next was Team Player, which is they show in a lot of commercials. You originally use a minigun on top of a Humvee, and I didn't notice something until just a couple days ago, but when they, there's a Predator missile that comes down and takes out a building, you know, in the beginning of that level, if you look around, all the soldiers have out cell phones, and they're recording the video of the building getting bombed.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And, I gotta play that again, too.
Yeah, anyway, so then you move into town, and that was kind of a fun second mission. It didn't really have any high points. I mean, you're just kind of waiting on the tension that's inevitably going to be attacked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For me, the game really begins, though, with level 3, which is called Cliffhanger.
And quick question on Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
How many times did each of you fall off the cliff?
I did not fall off the cliff.
How about you, Mike?
I played it on Paul's computer, and I think I fell off the cliff once, and then I played it on mine once I got it, and I never fell off.
Yeah, I fell off once, like, the first time.
Yeah.
You get used to it.
Cliffhanger was the first cool, like, big mission that was in the game,
uh-huh.
In which you're in a blizzard. First, you're rock climbing, or basically ice climbing, and there's a scene in it which you can't avoid where you almost fall off this cliff, and you get saved by Soap, who is revealed to be your captain. And he has a thick Scottish accent.
I like Soap.
You know, Soap's awesome. Which is cool because I like that they carried him over from the last game because you were Soap. And so you always wondered, you know, what does Soap look like and everything. Anyway, Cliffhanger's a lot of fun. You're in a blizzard for much of it, and then you actually make a daring escape on snowmobiles.
That level's very fun.
And the thing about it is that they could have made the vehicle portion so bad so fast. I mean, I can think of countless James Bond levels where you've been on vehicles that just feel wrong.
The entire level is you driving away.
This felt so awesome. The snowmobiles just felt a tad too fast. Like when you're playing Forza and you just know you're going too fast through areas to control it well.
Yeah, and I like how it slid back and forth. Like, it felt really loose.
It felt horribly loose.
It gave you the feeling that you're going, 80 miles an hour, and it was really hard to control this while you're getting away.
Anyway, you make a massive jump at the end. Totally unrealistic, but way fun.
Stuff explodes around you.
Yeah, that's the one part of the game where stuff explodes for absolutely no reason.
Yeah, that is true.
I guess the helicopter was supposed to be following you or something, but... Anyway, Cliffhanger is a really fun mission, and then we move into No Russian, which we talked about before. It's the quote, infamous terrorist level. We don't really need to spend much time with it. Obviously, it sets up the game, the entire game's plot.
Only downside of the mission?
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to shoot Makarov and end the entire story right there.
I don't really know. I guess we'll figure out in the next game, because obviously you've seen the end, and you know it's set up for a direct sequel. Although, unlike Boondock Saints 2, this is a sequel I wanted to continue the second we got to the end.
Oh, yeah.
So, No Russian, you already talked about, that's the terrorist level, that depending on who you are, it was effective or it was not effective. Anyway, the next mission is called Takedown, and you fight in Rio de Janeiro in the favela. Now, this one, the first part of it was really cool. You're running through the city, and you have to take this guy down, and you end up having to shoot his leg because you can't kill him and stuff.
Oh, that was the worst level. The worst. I hated that level.
Then after that, you get to go into the favela, and...
Oh, I forgot about that level. That level was worse.
The scenery of the favela is really pretty. It's very bright, and there's... lots of plants, and there's lots of buildings and stuff, but very quickly you realize that it's a horrible place to be, because there's basically nowhere you can get to safety.
Uh-huh. Countless militia, and all their bullets go through, every wall you hide behind.
Exactly. It was a horrible place to try and hide.
You never know where you're getting shot from. You turn around, you don't see anybody, and they're, up in a building. The thing is, normal games, you'll go, past... You'll go past the guys, you'll kill all the guys, and then you walk past, and all your men go past. But the thing is, on this game, you go past, and then guys pop up from behind you that you know, and start shooting you from behind, and you're like, that's not supposed to happen.
It was probably the only mission too where you spend most of your time by yourself. Which was kind of annoying, because most of the game you're with other people, and you feel like you're working as a team.
And this one just felt like you had no help at all.
Exactly. Anyway, then after that we get into Act 2, in which the Russians invade America. And we get to play a mission called Wolverines, not in any way named for a movie from 1984 called Red Dawn, in which the Russians are parachuting into Virginia and everywhere else, and you're basically fighting your way through the suburbs of a city in Virginia. I think they give the name of it, but I can't remember. A town in Virginia, and fighting the Russians. And Wolverines, to me, was such a fun level.
Oh, it was great.
You fight through houses, and you're dodging the BTRs that are driving around there, and you eventually make it to a gas station, and then you end up defending the burger town.
You defend a bunch of different places.
You defend a bunch of places, but for some reason it stuck out to me most when we defended Burger Town. You defend a place called Nate's, which reminds me of Ruby Tuesday inside. There's a bomb Taco Loco, which looks exactly like Taco Bell, but for some reason the Burger Town stuck out the most because it looked just like Burger King. I don't know. It felt most at home to me to be doing that. The funny thing is, when it's over, you get the... you get the Royale with Cheese achievement.
That was great.
I really liked that level. It really felt like it was realistic.
Yeah.
Because no one has ever, from foreign soil, has ever, attacked us like full scale, you know, like invasion from another country with, you know, just almost just as good as arms as we have.
Yeah.
And it just, it really seemed like realistic.
Well, yeah, and the thing about it, people can say whatever they want about how it's not realistic, about how the Russians would never do that, but if you think about it a little bit, it's more realistic than you'd think. Because
yeah,
we'd use nukes.
The only thing is that we're caught off guard by them coming over, which would never happen.
Well, I don't know. At that point, it felt like a really great Tom Clancy novel or something, you know?
Yeah.
That part did seem kind of realistic.
Unrealistic.
Or fake, but, I mean...
But it was so much fun, though.
It was
something we'd never seen, and just the how real they made it, how, you know, the settings and everything was just awesome. And that was a part that still sticks out to me, and I'm glad we've got all those Spec Ops missions, you know, that we've labored through so difficultly. Homeland Security!
Oh, gosh.
That one's so much fun, though. And then after that, it was actually kind of fun. The Hornet's Nest was another mission in the favela, which is over pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about it is that it's given how much the first favela mission is difficult, Hornet's Nest does not seem nearly as hard to me, you know? In fact, Hornet's Nest, I really like it. There's one part at the end, you're running across rooftops, and no matter how you do it, there's a jump you cannot make. You fall off the edge and drop about 15 feet or something.
Oh, yeah, I messed up the first time.
And you wake up and everyone misses it, you know.
That jump. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the second one, I know you're talking
about the helicopter.
But you have to wake up and basically you have to make a minute run to this helicopter that you all were running to. Because the Brazilian militia are shooting at you. And it's played also perfectly because it's one of those things where you start to see bullets in front of you, you know, and you actually get hit by some. But I was like, oh, there's no one behind me. There's no way there's anyone behind me. I turned around and looked, and there was, like, two guys sprinting after me. So I kept on sprinting. You have to jump to the helicopter in one of the film's crescendo moments.
One of the things I liked about that sequence was...
The film's crescendo moments, Paul.
See? See, this movie had this game. It's a lot like a movie, you know. I did just call it a film twice. What were you saying,
that's
Mike?
Funny. Oh, I was saying how... In normal games, when they have scenes like that, which are cool, but they give you, like, a straight line to a point. Like, they'll show you a point, and they'll show your distance from it, but the thing is, they don't tell you how to get there.
Yeah.
And this one, it felt more realistic, because it would show a distance to a point, but it's not the point you end up at the beginning. It's just, like, to a straight line that you could actually run in a straight line to, and once you get there, it shows another point. So you know exactly where you're going, and it seems, like, realistic, where you're not... you know, spending 20 minutes trying to figure out how to get up on this ledge that leads to the point you're supposed to get to.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
So anyway, the Hornet's Nest was a lot of fun. You escape the favela. Exodus is the next mission, and it is in, again, in the suburbs of America. And that one, I don't know what it was, but it was realistic and it was fun, but it was not as memorable for me as the first one. The really crazy thing about it is that at the very end, a plane has gone down, and it's Air Force One.
Yep.
That you see. which is pretty cool.
More than awesome. Let's see. The next one is The Only Easy Day Was Yesterday.
What'd you guys think of that one?
Fun because it's like you can see the entire level from where you are, you know.
I just thought
I like the breaching.
The breaching was
the
fun, but on top of that, I just thought it was a well designed level, you know, because you're on an oil rig in this one. You leave a submarine and you ride on a set path all the way up to it. You pull two guys into the water and stab them right when the mission begins, and then you get up on the oil rig and you and a team of about, like, 30, I want to say Navy SEALs, but it's Team 141, infiltrate this thing. And it's so much fun. You get to breach and clear a few rooms with hostages in them, and
you
blow up a wall, and there's smoke, and there's fragments of stuff everywhere, and you basically have a few seconds to look around the room, and and take out the bad guys before they shoot the hostages, or and not shoot the hostages. And that was so much fun. But that whole mission was great because it feels like, you know, at first you're doing things stealthily, and then it slowly builds up, and then at the very end there's all sorts of chaos on the oil rig, you know. At that point you've completely ditched your silenced weapons and picked up, if you're me, you picked up an AUG and a Vector.
Yeah, shut down the helicopters.
Yeah, the helicopters, man. I died so many times.
There's so many open spots on an oil rig with a helicopter.
But it's a great map, and it's full of explosions. And although it's one mission, it's got the breach and clear. It, compared to other missions, it doesn't have any huge moments, you know. I mean, Cliffhanger obviously has that fast, you know, the race, and No Russian has the great scene where the SWAT team comes walking out of that smoke with all the riot shields in front of them, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
At that scene, that was one of those scenes where you start to shoot at them and you realize that the bullets won't work. You kind of panic for a second. You're like, oh, gosh, what are we going to do?
That's when you start chucking nade after nade.
The only easy day was yesterday. It was just a fun mission. I mean, I like that one just for its merit, and I really wish...
One of my favorite missions was the Gulag.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I really hope they make a oil rig for multiplayer. I wish they'd done that. It feels like it would have been so easy to do.
The only thing kind of close is High Rise, but it's still too small.
But it's not. I don't know. The oil rig would have been fun. I like that setting. I like the scenery off the edges and the glare of the sun and stuff.
Uh huh.
Anyway, the next level, and John talked about it. It's one of my favorites too. It's called the Gulag. And you assault. You basically go straight from the oil rig. You ride on a helicopter, and you guys go straight from there and attack. A castle in Russia that has been turned into a prison for prisoner 627, who you discover is Captain Price from the first game that I thought had died. I ended the game thinking how horrible it was that Captain Price had died. Because he tosses you his gun and you've been playing. That's the thing I like about Call of Duty in this sense is that it used to be that they just had the names on people, but it didn't really work to convey a sense of teamwork, you know. But by time the end of Call of Duty 4 had come around, you'd known the names of everyone so well. This game is the same thing. By the end, you know, when Ghost and everyone are playing, you're wishing they weren't. We'll get to that in a minute, but. The Gulag is a lot of fun. I mean, you fight down through this castle, you fight into a prison complex, and then the craziest moment for me is when you fight through this bathhouse in there, which looks exactly like it was taken out of the Rock, the movie. And it's just there's people with riot shields coming at you, and you have to get cover in like a corner and basically, you know, be really quick or else you're going to get shot in that mission.
You got these people like up on the balcony or whatever. Exactly. Where guards are standing.
Where the prison
guards
are.
Like a prison shower.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. They're shooting you from up there too, so you got to get them.
And that mission was great because the escape from that mission was a lot of fun because it gets to a point where the Navy are extremely impatient and they start shelling this castle.
Every movie seems to have a Navy being impatient and shelling stuff too early.
If you were on a boat, you'd be impatient too. We've been out here for 2.5 years. We need to start shooting these things.
It's an action.
So anyway, the Navy starts shooting the castle, and Soap fires a flare up through this hole in the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. You're like in the basement.
Exactly.
This
helicopter
comes like all the way to the roof.
You all get pulled out by a helicopter. And holy cow, is it awesome. You get, you know, basically picked up, you know, I mean, like the hand of someone picks you up and pulls you straight out of the castle, and you get to see the castle, you know, breaking down and getting shot under you and everything.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun. And
then, that was awesome. The next one,
we go back to America for the first of the Washington, D.C., Washington D.C. maps, and this one, because we'd seen it in commercials, it wasn't quite as crazy as they
were. I didn't like this. Yeah, I didn't like that one as much.
I didn't like that one as much either. It felt like it felt like a bad mission from a previous Call of Duty.
It did.
I mean, I liked the setting was great. When you're defending, you're using rockets to take down Russians.
Cause the Javelin rockets.
They're trying to take down a... they're trying to take down, like, evacuation, citizens who are evacuating.
Oh, yeah.
But it felt, I mean, you were just moving from room to room, and I don't know, it was dark, and it wasn't so much fun. But I did like seeing the Washington Monument and everything. And that initial scene, when you're underground, and everyone's shell-shocked, and you walk outside, and you see that you're in front of some Washington, D.C. building, you know. It was good. Anyway...
Oh, let's see, next after that.
So, we begin Act 3 after this, and one of my favorite missions in the game, although it's weird, it's so far in that I haven't played it again yet. I've played up through Act 1, and I'm at the end of Act 2 again, just playing it real quick. We're up to, I'm up to Other and Accord, but Contingency is the next mission, and it's so much fun. You play with Captain Price at first, and you two walk through, you basically crawl through a bunch of snow, and you take out, you snipe at simultaneous times dogs and guys.
Oh, that one's really fun.
Yeah. It was the sniper mission from this game, you know, in the way that the Pripyat mission was from Call of Duty 4. Although it wasn't quite as a spectacle, but you walk through this forest, and you take out a bunch of guys, and then you get into this town, which was a lot of fun, too. You go into the town, and by that time, you're with a bunch of teammates or whatever, and you work your way across the town because you have to get to this submarine that Captain Price is supposedly going to stop from firing a nuke to America with. But what he does is rig it to blow up at a certain time. I forgot to mention something. At the end of Contingency, you ride a helicopter, and at one point you actually fall out of the sky with it. You're close to the ground, but it just breaks down, it gets shot down, and you're fighting off Russians that are coming towards you.
Uh-huh.
Contingency, this nuke is fired, and Second Son, you actually get to see the nuke explode. You're in space. You're, just for sake of view, they show you a guy who's at the International Space Station.
Get blown to pieces.
They tell you to look over so they can use your helmet cam to look at the nuke, and it blows up outside the atmosphere, or in the atmosphere.
It explodes in the upper atmosphere.
It basically creates an EMP and shuts down the... Eastern power grid in the United States, and powers down all sorts of things above the
city. Oh, yeah. That level was really cool. You get out of the crashed helicopter, exactly. And everything's just like... All the planes and everything just raining out of the sky because of the EMP.
Yeah, so your mission, the radio or something is still working. No, the radio's not working by that point, but you're supposed to go to retake Whiskey Hotel, which, in case you missed... WH is the Whiskey Hotel is, the Army abbreviation names. So that means go to the WH, which means the White House. and so you, in those missions, you actually get to retake, in the Second Son and Whiskey Hotel, you get to retake the White House, which is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
But that mission is awesome because you're looking up at the sky and helicopters are just raining out of the sky and hitting the ground, because everything in the air was, this EMP shot took all the electronics out for everything, so all these are falling down. And later on in the mission, it starts just torrentially downpouring thanks to the storm, too. I thought those were really well-done missions. I mean, especially at the very end
of
the hotel, they tell you to run up and set green flares to mark that you have buildings under control. And if you look,
when you get there at the last second.
If you look around, you're there at the last second. But if you look around, you're not the only building that has green flares on top.
Oh yeah.
So basically, what happens is that you, after this EMP goes off, the city is firmly in American hands. And so the city that does not. So the Air Force was going to carpet bomb Washington D.C. and they didn't do that because the troops there showed off that they had control of everything, which was pretty fun. After this, the game starts to wind down, but speed up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we get the loose ends mission, and loose ends, we go to the, you split up, and one group of you goes to an abandoned airfield in Afghanistan, and one group of you goes to a Georgia and Russian border estate house. And walking up to this was awesome, because you're going up to this house, and there's a full group of your Team 141 soldiers. And you walk into a minefield, essentially, and someone triggers it to go off, and all these jumping mines go off.
Bouncing Betty's.
Yeah, and you have to hit the ground before these things explode, and so that takes out, like, two-thirds of your team, and then you're ambushed. And after you take out, you know, the umpteen Russians that are there to, the Makarov's men that are there to ambush you,
yeah,
you fight your way up to this estate. You get in the estate, you take this data, but you have to wait for it to download, so you have to fight off a ton of guys that come.
Oh, that part was the worst.
Uh-huh.
Protecting the downloading.
I actually did that in the first try. I was able to, I saw Will do it.
Yeah, what I did, I actually just camped at one spot, and I just kept on getting nades and throwing them. And
oh, yeah, well, I did that too, but they came up from behind me in the kitchen and iced me in the back.
I think I went over to the data, because I didn't want them to destroy it or something, so I went over directly to the data, you know?
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a lot of fun, and after that, you get the moment of the game that I would say is the closest to when you die because of a nuke in Call of Duty 4, and you're betrayed by General Shepard.
Oh, that was crazy.
He has been commanding you for quite a while, and you're walking out to this helicopter. You've just escaped with the data. He takes the data, and then he pulls his gun, and Ghost is with you. It's you and Ghost are on this mission, so right now you're playing Roach. He Ghost just yells, no, and he kills Ghost, and then he shoots you.
Oh, yeah, and he drags you over to a pit.
But you're conscious. They drag you over to a pit, cover you in gasoline, and burn you both. I don't know. That part, I had no idea that happened. In the game, you know, that was one I did not see coming at all. I could not have seen it.
I didn't see that either.
And see, people would say that this, they tried too hard to capture what happened in Call of Duty 4, you know, when Paul MacArthur, whatever his name is, gets killed in the nuke. And the one thing that I would say, I don't know, man. People say they tried.
I don't think so. That's original.
I think that this whole betrayal scene was absolutely great in terms of.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the fact that you stay alive and you get burned, you know, and and then Shepard's kind of talking about his plan at this point. And everything that happens there, it just, it was good. I mean, it was not good, but it was a well-told plot.
It wasn't good, but it was well played.
After that, you get to go, you and Soap, you're playing Soap again, which is fun. You and Captain Price are at the Boneyard, just a deserted airplane graveyard, basically. And you are completely separated at this point, you and Captain Price, and you're fighting across this, but what's happened is that Makarov's men are fighting General Shepard's men. And at this point, no one knows that General Shepard has gone rogue, essentially, and he wants history to favor him.
No one except you two.
Exactly. He wants history to favor him as the big hero of this whole conflict. And so his men are fighting Makarov's men.
You're fighting both.
And you have to get through this battle, and it's a load of fun. You escape. You get to drive a SUV at the very end, and you drive it into the back of Nikolai's AC-130 as he takes off.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're breaking down at the very end now. After you escape the Boneyard, which was a lot of fun, that mission was great, you search the Afghan cave network for General Shepard.
Uh-huh.
And the beginning of this mission was another one. Apparently in Britain there were two events in the game that that you could skip, you know, by that warning you got in the beginning of the game that says there's offensive content in here. The second one is right when this mission, just like old times, begins, when you rappel down and then you stab the American guy in the heart.
Yeah.
He looks straight into your eyes as he's dying, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That was deemed offensive as well in England. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how you'd skip that, but apparently you do. So you slide down that, you do that, and you just do this fast-paced chase through all these Afghan caves to find General Shepard. What did you think about that mission?
I thought it was really good, like sneaking around, rappelling, and then. But I didn't like it once they found you because then
didn't it make it really hard? Yeah,
it made it hard.
That was one part of the game where I knocked it down from regular to recruit for that part because it just got so hard.
Oh, I played it on regular all the way through. I died so many times.
I started on hardened because I thought I'd just take my time and play it on hardened.
I think they made it really hard so they give you like a real hatred for Shepard, which I had by the end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that too, yeah, because it was hard getting to him. And then the last mission, you get into you jump into this river and you grab a boat and you chase General Shepard, who's also in a boat. Basically, you chase him right off of a waterfall.
Oh, no, you forgot about the plane. The helicopter, whatever picks him up. Was it a plane?
No, that's what happened to him. I can't even remember.
No. He rides up into a plane, and Price shoots the helicopter plane down.
That's right.
And
so,
then they go over the waterfall, and then you go over the waterfall.
Yeah. So he gets in a helicopter, and basically you crash over a waterfall, and Price shoots the helicopter down, and you're out. Price is, and you're separated a little bit, and. You start fighting Makara, or...
Oh, yeah, you go to kill him with your knife, and you're just, like, all traumatized and stuff like that. And it's, like, in the middle of a desert storm.
Yeah, you get stabbed in the chest with a knife by Shepard. And then, you know, it's crazy, because it was just... At that point, I really had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, I figured that he might get killed, but I was just worried, because, I mean, I was like, don't die, soap!
Oh, yeah.
But, at that point, Captain Price shows up, and the two have a fist fight, and basically...
Long fist fight.
Yeah, Shepard
starts... Well, you're going in and out of consciousness the whole time.
Price. Shepard gets the upper hand.
It's really stressful, because you can't do anything to help Price, because
exactly.
Price gets the upper hand, you're like, oh, we're winning, and then he starts dying, and, you know, he's about to kill Price.
You gain a bit of consciousness, you're able to pull the knife out of your chest.
I really like that. They made you press E... Or, you know, to pull the knife out of your chest, and you had to press it so many times really fast.
I know, but you can't press it fast enough.
I love how they made you throw it at him, too.
You whip it out, you throw it, and you stab it right into his eye, the Shepard's eye, and he dies gloriously in slow motion. Price gets himself up, and then he and Nikolai walk to the plane, and Nikolai knows a safe place, and that's where the game ends. And
yep.
It would make an awesome movie.
It would.
Yes, it would.
It's the kind of thing that I'd really love it if someone would, you know, if they released, like, some sort of mod or something for the PC version, you know, where you could modify the camera or record the mission, and so you could actually play through it and then go back and edit sections like that, you know? Because it'd be a lot of fun to go in and cut out, like, you know, 2 hours or an hour of the plot and a lot of the combat and stuff, and then make it into a movie.
It'd be
pretty fun. Anyway, we rambled on.
Yeah, do it for tonight.
So, stay tuned to see the design podcast that's coming out soon. And this has been episode 20, and we'll be back with episode 21 next week, in which the only confirmed topic is that we're going to be talking about our history with racing games. And no Modern Warfare 2 talk.
I think we pretty much covered the entire game.
I think we have too. So
it's been a good episode.
It has indeed. I'll talk to you guys shortly. Have fun.
Good one.